It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. Always live as well on the free Odyssey app. It's Thursday. It's a coordinator Thursday. That's what it is. What do they say? It's competition Wednesday. Finish Friday. All about the ball Thursday.
Yes.
We're all about the ball today. Except for at the end of the show when we give way to a puck. Because we got Capitals hockey tonight here on the Team 980. So we are off and running. We got a little bit extra that we got to get in today because the show only goes till 6:45. Anthony, I'm not going to lie. I'm most excited for 4:45 today because earlier this week, Darris Dameron, the producer extraordinaire of Grant and Danny across the hall, came in very concerned about you and Madden, like the video game. And there's a whole discussion to apparently get into here. So I'm excited for that at 4:45. It seems rather serious. Darris cares about it a lot, and you know I'm here to help Darris out. I want to let him get this off his chest, even though it is directed at you. But I think you are prepared to handle yourself.
Craig, I went home yesterday. I took the time to gather my talking points because. I don't like what Darris thinks, you know, or says about me. And I don't really like what, you know, people in the chat say about me either. So I'm here to defend my honor.
Excellent. And with a fresh haircut.
Ooh, you see it?
I did.
Hey, look, I saw you get one. I was like, let me get one.
Yesterday, it really looked fresh. Today, it looks just like, I mean, it's still better than it was. But, like, I didn't use any product or blow dry my hair. I was lazy because I eventually was like, I'm just going to go get needles put in my leg. So that was fun at PT today.
That probably hurt.
You'd been doing a bunch of physical therapy. You ever get dry needled?
No, I just get heat and ice.
You got a dry needle game, bro. It's next level.
Yeah, I think that scares me a little bit.
Yeah, I have four needles in my shin. A couple more in my hip, we'll call it.
I maybe should have gotten it in my back, but I just, you know, took the heat.
Literally. You still have to take the cold, too, in the form of an ice bath.
Well, I mainly put the cold on my neck.
Mm. All right, well, we'll get that. Here's what we got on the show today. Cliff and Joe Witt Jr. talked, obviously, as they do every Thursday. So we will let you hear throughout the show what they had to say. And the headline to me coming out of the coordinator press conferences is in the form of something that Joe Witt said that I thought was very telling. I thought that was very interesting. And it started in his opening remarks as he took to the podium today.
Plays that. And I hate to keep coming up here and talking about communication because we've been good the last couple weeks. But four plays cost us the game, you know. And I'm not even worried about the third down penalties that extended drives. They didn't need any help. But that's football, okay? Sometimes you're going to get football plays and you're going to get a penalty here and there. They're going to get their plays in the run game, but we can't give them anything. And if we don't give up those four individual plays, we win that game. And so that's that. And I'll take responsibility for that because they shouldn't make those mistakes. Defenses that we know, and we didn't get it executed. So we're, like I said, we're working to make sure we minimize those mistakes moving forward. But we can't keep up coming up here. I can't keep coming up here saying the same thing. Got to get it corrected. We have a good football team, and we have to do what we need to do. From an injury standpoint, we lost a lot of guys. And so, but, you know, like I like to say, you know, injury is just like, you know, blocking, tackling, running. All right, it's part of NFL football. So we got to give these other guys opportunities. Sometimes you get your opportunity, you become a star. So I'm excited to see the guys that are going to come in and play. And we always talked about rolling with a deep crew. So they got to come in and be ready to rock and roll. So with that, I'll take any of your questions.
So that's how Joey Jr. opened today. Four plays that cost the game. I don't think he's ever specifically in this press conference laid out the exact four plays, but it's a lot of the miscommunication stuff that happened. There's two coverage busts where that involved Frankie Louvu and another defensive back and a defensive back. I believe one is Percy Butler. I believe one was BSJ, but it might have been actually. I think it was one of the other corners, but it was Noah. Both. Follow the same guy and leave someone else open. So I'm guessing those are two. If I had to guess, the play where St. Juice trails Rashad Bateman because he gets picked and there's no communication on that. There's a technique thing where Benjamin could probably stay a little more square, but also like you can't let your guy get picked like that if you're guarding Mark Andrews. Like you've got to, if you're I think it was Jeremy Chin, Bobby Wagner, someone, whoever had Mark Andrews, the guy who ultimately set the pick, like you've got to either communicate, you've got to help your guy out and switch that. Like, you got to have a better plan. And I think it's interesting because Joe is now feeling in a way that you probably don't feel quite as intensely as a position coach, what it's like to be a coordinator in the NFL, which is you can have a bunch of really good weeks in a row. You face a team that's awesome. They hand it to you a little bit. And you're like, I thought we had all this stuff figured out. And I think that the thing that you have to realize as a coach is you have to both accept that you're not going to be, that there is no such thing as figuring it out. I think that the biggest misconception about sports is no one, even LeBron as an NBA player, even Brady as a football player, as a quarterback, those guys, it looks like they did. They get as close as anybody ever does. But part of that is they consistently work. They figure out how to keep solving the problems because sports are physically and mentally just an endless string of problems to solve. How do I get around this guy? What decision do I have to make in terms of where I throw the football? What defensive assignment do I have? Do I make the right decisions? And then do I physically execute upon them time and time and time and time again? And so as a coach, there's no such thing as figuring it out because every week you play an offense that's a little bit different, that presents different challenges. And you have to try to, like, and there is no, by the way, solution that's bulletproof. There is no game plan that you go in with that another team can't make an adjustment and figure something out. Or, hey, the game plan was perfect until the guy missed the tackle. Well, that wasn't part of the plan. Now, hey, we had it covered, but that guy's running scotch-free. You get penalties that happen. You have injuries that make that harder to execute. You did something because you knew you had a guy that could handle it. He gets hurt on the second snap of the game, and now we got to figure out a new way to solve that problem because the guy, his backup, can't do the thing that we were asking the first guy to do. And so I think I find humor in it because I've been doing this a long time. It's probably not funny at all to Joe Witt, and I'm not laughing. To be very clear, I'm laughing at the general nature of coaching because that's like it's something that everyone does. I'm not laughing specifically at Joe, and I'm not laughing at Joe at all. It's just to hear a coordinator get up and be like, "Why I can't keep up getting up here and saying the same things, and I've got to figure it out because they shouldn't be doing this when we didn't have that problem the last couple weeks." It's like, yeah, because that's you're coaching a bunch of humans who are young men that are trying to figure stuff out in real time and against the best athletes in the world. And you're not going to hit about 1,000 on that. But here's the important part. Here's why it's you don't need to laugh at Joe Witt. You don't need to be mad at Joe Witt. You don't need to be sad about anything Joe Witt said. Is the mentality that Joe Witt has is how you be right way more often than you're wrong. That while you have to somewhere deep down inside accept the fact that there is no such thing as figuring it out and there is no such thing as perfection, you have to constantly pursue it because the hope is that you do as good of a job as you can. And the only way to do that is to pursue figuring it out, is to make those changes each and every week. How can I either design a better scheme and use my players and put them in better positions, or do I communicate to them what I need to see happen? What they need to do in a way that allows them to execute better. And we've seen huge strides for certain players, including a highlight St. Juice, because he and I, as in Benjamin and I, talked about this in our preseason interview, where he talked about last year, I'd be responsible for the go, the dig, the comeback, the in, the out. And if anytime my guy caught the ball anywhere near me, even if it wasn't really my fault, I would get yelled at. And this year, it's like, just don't get beat deep. For instance, sometimes it's don't give up the comeback. Sometimes it's don't give up the in. Sometimes it's don't give up the out. But depending on the coverage, they're much clearer. And if, for whatever reason, you give up the thing that you were told, don't worry about that. Either the guy whose fault it is going to give up or get yelled at or told like, hey, that needs to be better. Or if it's the thing that is just the weakness in the defense, because no defense is perfect. Otherwise, every single coordinator would call that play every single time. If you give up the honey hole shot in cover two and you had good depth and a quarterback just made an absolutely insane throw, maybe it's your safety's a little bit late, but the ball winds up going over your head, but you were where you're supposed to be because you're supposed to play at 8 yards or whatever, you know, based off down distance and in whatever version of cover two, like you're in your spot. You hustle back and get the depth when the ball is thrown, but you just get beat by a good throw. Then you go, okay. Now you give up a deep out in cover three where you're responsible for that. Well, now we got a problem. Like, these are the kinds of things that are really important, and Joe is trying to figure out how to make it week over week that instead of 75% of the time we're right, we're 80. Instead of 80% of the time we're right, we're 85. And you're always trying to pursue that 100, knowing that you're never truly going to get there. And I love Joe's approach to that. I love Joe's ownership of that. I think it's a way to both publicly take accountability that if fans hear this, they're like, okay, these guys are trying while not throwing players under the bus. But the reality is, too, on the back end of this, if he keeps trying stuff and they give more information and some guys maybe get it and other guys continue to not, eventually it is a reflection of the players. And that's the last part is they are understaffed in the defensive backfield. Like, obviously, Benjamin, we've talked about a lot this week. He's a guy that's not a premier number one corner by any stretch. I don't know that he's a premier number two corner. He's a fine two if you have a really good one. They don't. So he's asked to guard types of players and do things that you would rather not put him in position to do. Noah Igbinoghene, great rotational piece. Not a guy you want to be your starting slot. That's why he's a former first-round pick who's become a journeyman around the league. Sander Still's a rookie, and he's grown week over week in a tremendous way, but he's a rookie now playing out of position because they don't have anybody else that can play out there. You know, Kwan's got his strengths. He's still young at the position. Jeremy Chin's got his strengths, but he's also got his weaknesses. And so they're trying to find solutions week over week. And against a team like Baltimore, there just aren't a lot of good ones, even if your defense is awesome. And so what's going to be interesting is against Carolina, a team that does present some interesting stuff offensively, can you get it corrected to a serviceable level? That's a reflection of Joe Witt's coaching far more than the four plays that are you have that you give up the game against the Ravens, because the Ravens can cause that kind of chaos because they do so many things well, and the job is so hard to do, snap in, snap out, against players that are that good, a scheme that is that good, and an operator in Lamar Jackson who is as good as anybody in the NFL. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Hear a little bit more from Witt and Cliff Kingsbury next. And then coming up at 4:30, game of the night last night was on the hardwood. We'll break it down. 5 o'clock today, our pal Dan Pizzuta is with us. We're locked and loaded on a Thursday on the Hoffman Show. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. Always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Interesting stuff from Joe Witt that we played you a little bit earlier to start the show. Also some interesting stuff from Cliff Kingsbury today. We'll get back to even more of this at 6 o'clock in our pick 6 at 6. But just scrolling through some of the sound bites here. And there's something I wanted to play for you because I think this was really interesting on a big picture NFL level. And that is how Cliff has continued to evolve. And one, just a fun fact from today. The flea flicker screen that was run this weekend, Cliff is willing to take inspiration from anywhere. And here's where he got that flea flicker screen to Austin Eckler from.
Yep, I got to cite my sources always. It's a Jeff Brohm play. He did it at Purdue. And obviously we have David Blau who played for Jeff Brohm. So David Blau had brought that one up and they threw it to a tight end. We ended up sneaking Austin back there and it ended up working out. The guys executed it perfectly because they brought a pressure, which even made it better. But yeah, that's shout out Jeff Brohm for that one.
Shout out Jeff Brohm. And then, of course, what do? You build on that because the next play, there was some similarities and some similar motions. They do something completely different.
It just worked out. Like in you have those scenarios in your head where you would sequence it, and then sometimes it hits. But if that screen didn't hit, then, yeah, we weren't get to that one. So it just kind of worked out. We had that personnel group we could line up and get rolling again fast, and so it played out in our favor that time.
And so cool. Hey, good planning, good execution, knowing, hey, we could have a big opportunity here, not just for one play, but sequence two. And I think it shows you the reason I wanted to play that and play the bite I'm about to play for you is because the way Cliff Kingsbury thinks about offense is incredibly detailed. And it has been really fun to watch this year. And I talked in the last segment about how ultimately this game and all sports, but especially football, all of the moving parts, the scripted nature of it, because it's not a free-flowing basketball or soccer or whatever type of game where there's, you know, or even, you know, baseball in its own way is different because there's not really a script. It's like an action. There's a ball, and then they throw it, and dude either hits it or he doesn't, and then everybody reacts off of that. In football, it's this sounds like Anthony, hold on. This is an age test for to an extent. If I say George Carlin's baseball and football, does that ring a bell at all to you?
You talking about George Carlin?
Yeah, the comedian. You know that baseball and football old skit about warfare, like football basically being like war and baseball. We just want to go home.
No.
Okay. You should watch that immediately.
Okay.
One. Two, he talks about, you know, oh, we got to have a battle plan. And I feel like this segment's turning into that. But ultimately, like, you have to have your plan. You have to have your, it's schemed up and everyone's got to execute their jobs. And, you know, you're trying to create space and vacate here and fill in there. And there's a physical nature to it and all these things. And it's just, it's problem solving. It is incredibly violent problem solving. And so understanding what problems you're trying to solve and then what tools are in your toolbox to solve them, and watching Cliff do this week over week over week over week has been really, really fun. And one of the ways that he was really heavily criticized coming into the year was he did not use a lot of pre-snap motion. And this year, he has used a lot more of pre-snap motion. And specifically, there's been a rise in the NFL of at-snap motion, a.k.a. as the ball is snapped, there is still a guy in motion. So instead of, I got my wide receiver lined up to the left, he runs to the right, resets, now set hut. It's my tight end's running across the formation, and as he crosses the tackle, set hut, and then that dude turns up field and rams into somebody. Or, you know, it's Tyreek Hill, obviously, last year. Quick short motion, let me change my split, and let me get up field and kind of get a running head start. So what does Cliff think of that increase of at-snap motion around
the
NFL?
I think the game is just cyclical, and people see certain teams doing it that have had a level of success, and then it's like, oh, okay, well, we could add that, and we could do it this way and add this wrinkle. And so I think that's what you're going through, and I'm sure it'll transition to something else here in a few months. But yeah, it's definitely picked up. I see a lot of people doing it, and I know it's a challenge for defenses. I think you talk to those guys, that's probably where everybody's kind of getting that information, is their DCs are like, hey, this is a tough look here, or that's a tough look there.
And they've used it. You know, they've used like the orbit motions with Zacchaeus, for instance. And it's funny how they use some of that stuff, right? Because just off the top of my head in the Baltimore game alone, they use it one time to get Zacchaeus moving on a screen where they throw him the ball. So, hey, we are going to throw you the football. The 50-yard run in the, what was that, the Cleveland game from Eckler. They use it to clear the side. So Zacchaeus starts on the right, motions into the backfield, circles around, and winds up going left. And then they run to the right because now we've pulled the defender that's in man-to-man coverage on Zacchaeus away from where the play is going. Zacchaeus then hustles his behind off 50, 60 yards down the field to recover Eckler's fumble from that I'm out of the play by design position, which is just ridiculous. But you do that. Sometimes you run it, and then you can use that guy as a blocker. They've done that a couple times this year where they run a guy across. And so using that at-snap motion, something that wasn't necessarily in Cliff's toolbox, has been great. But he also knows how to operate without it, because sometimes, you know, hey, we're going to use motion to try to pull a guy here, and Cliff will just do it based off formation. We're going to line up in a way that you have to match us, and now you're as equally out of the way as if we had tried to run you all over the field, but our quarterback gets a cleaner picture. And so it's been really fun to watch Cliff problem solve this year, and it's something that I think he has adapted and taken a lot of, you know, these West Coast, Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay things, and also obviously he's a watcher of the college game, and some of these big, you know, looping orbit motions and things like that are coming out of the college game. Or you take a play that your assistant quarterback's coach ran in college 10 years ago, and hey, this is one I remember that we liked. This is a good way that we could do something. And you're getting to see why I think so many people had so many good things to say about Cliff Kingsbury, despite the fact that the resume went, wait a second, this is the guy that Dan Quinn's bringing in? He's got all this connections to the Kyle Shanahan tree, and you're going Cliff Kingsbury? Turns out that was a very good decision. Turns out it's a very good decision. And the other piece, and this is not schematic, it's not anything other than character and competitiveness. Cliff is so competitive as a play caller, and I talked about this during First and 10 earlier in the week. He refuses to let this offense get in a rut, And so even, for instance, when they struggled to get their run game going against Baltimore this week.
Yeah, they've been really stout against the run. We would have liked to run it better. There's no doubt. We needed to run it better to win that game and possess the ball more than we did. We had our defense out there a lot because we weren't able to establish the run game. But just a combination of things. I got to call a better game. You know, Brian's a tremendous player, but they're also very good at stopping the run, as you can tell through their first six games. But we got to be better establishing that, and that's kind of set up everything else for us throughout the season, and we weren't able to do that last week.
And so even though they couldn't do it, and because Baltimore is great at it, and you kind of realize, like, I'm not going to be able to run my head into a wall, I got to find ways to get us moving, he did. The compete level for him and the amount of things, whether it's a flea flicker screen or whatever else that he's willing to try, is endless. And that is something that not only has helped this offense and helped Jaden and really gotten them on the scoreboard with frequency, but matches Dan Quinn's approach to football. And frankly, Adam Peters' vision for the franchise, competitiveness everywhere. It shows up in play calling in a way that I never can remember saying about a play caller in the 10 plus years that I've been covering the NFL at this point. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And when we get back, an absolute game for the ages last night. We've got controversy coming up at 4:45. I just gonna sit back. A Madden adjacent fight, but also one that's really. I don't get to sit back, Anthony. We need. I don't know what they're called. Whatever, like the kind of wig that George Washington wore that like judges wear.
Oh yeah.
I need that and a gavel and a order. I get to decide who's right in the dispute between it's Craig's court. Ooh, that's a segment idea.
I'm looking forward to it.
So Craig's court coming up. It's open for session coming up in 4:45. I feel like Linnell wants to take every problem he has, and he probably wants to come to my courtroom. Doesn't realize he's just going to get slapped down a lot. Anyway. Last night, WNBA Finals Game 3. And I tweeted out at the end of this one, Anthony, Game 1, meet Game 3, handshake, games that the road team had no business winning. That was absolutely a wild game, but it is an especially wild game considering in Game 1 of this series, the Minnesota Lynx were down 18 on the road in New York. They come back, in part, are able to win the game thanks to a ridiculously silly foul by Sabrina Ionescu on Courtney Williams for a four-point play in the final seconds of the game, which is the first time Minnesota led in the whole thing. Then ultimately, they win in overtime. Well, last night, Minnesota, who had started horrendously in both games this series before mounting comebacks, started on fire at home. They're up 28-18 after the first quarter. But a slow second quarter, they only have an eight-point lead at half. New York comes out in the third and comes back. But in a game where, at one point, New York trailed by 15 points, Breanna Stewart was awesome, but slows her scoring in the fourth quarter. And Sabrina Ionescu, who had been absolutely terrible all night long from the field, she had like 2 points, hits two of, I don't know, the best shots in WNBA history, arguably. Like, huge monster three, and then another one from the logo to seal it. In what is, Ryan Rucco, by the way, what a call in the moment to go the biggest shot in New York Liberty history. And now all of a sudden they're on the verge of winning a championship. First of all, cold shot. I'm not like the world's biggest Sabrina Ionescu fan. Respect. What are you going to say? That is a ridiculously icy shot. And two, oh my God, how did they win that game? They were down 15. Well done for a team whose toughness was definitely under question after that game one loss.
To be honest, Craig, I think the Lynx comeback win in game one was a little bit more surprising than...
Of course. You know, New York's the number one seed. They're at home.
I wouldn't even attribute it to that. It's more so the Liberty actually had a 15-point lead with 5 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter.
That's a fair point.
As opposed to, you know, the Lynx getting out.
No doubt Minnesota's comeback is better.
Yeah.
But this one could be a part of, could be the one that changes the series if they can win one of the next two games, which they can either win on the road tomorrow night, or they can win at home on Sunday.
Yeah. The game was crazy. The shot by Sabrina, man, from the logo, when you had 10 seconds to get a better shot, get downhill to do anything, and that's what you settle for. I think that is the greatness that, again, like, people are seemingly missing when they don't tune into these games. These are the shots we see. Steph Curry, LeBron James, Devin Booker, Damian Lillard. We see these guys make those shots. Guess what? The women are also doing these shots. I mean, making these shots. And it's just awesome to see. I think this is a game the Lynx will definitely look back on and say, we should have had this one down the stretch.
No doubt.
They had some calls, though, that did not go their way, though, Craig.
They did not. Unfortunately, this is a part of sports. Is like,
it
you're
going
to have calls that don't go your way. They had a couple, and frankly, in the game that they won in game one, it was crazy. New York has definitely gotten a couple of the key things to go their way in this series. And, you know, there's one, it's kind of funny, because I actually thought it was good defense, too. But there's one in the fourth quarter initially, and they're doing the slow-mo replay as they go to break. And we've all seen this, right? Slow-mo replay, you're going to break. The color commentator, like Mark Jackson used to be the king of this. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, he hit the, mama, there goes that man again, right? Like when he narrate the replay.
Yep.
And you all of a sudden see on this slow-mo replay that wasn't Brianna Stewart's fifth block of the game.
Nope.
That was a missed foul call. And Rebecca Lobo just goes, ooh, and the high five. Go to commercial break. That's not going to help any of the ESPN has it in the bag for the Liberty takes. They definitely had a couple. Minnesota coach Cheryl Reeve, after the game, to her credit, was like, I don't think my star, Nafisa Collier, gets the same whistle as their star.
None.
And I respect that because what she's trying to do is work the refs for the next one. And that's the right thing to do. But the refs also need to get it right. But I think the bigger thing in this game that they couldn't control was not the, like, obviously a couple of shots, a couple of Courtney Williams, like, you're always living on a knife's edge with her, where she's really aggressive and it can bail you out of some spots, but it also gets you some shots that go up and you're like,
yeah,
I think we could have gotten a better look there, Court. So, but she's been way more good than bad in the series by a lot. So there's like a couple of stretches of play for sure. But the game changed tremendously when Alana Smith went out. Alana Smith in this game, and plus minus in single game is always a little funny.
Yeah.
But like, this is a big number. Okay. No one else in the entire game, I guess Kayla Thornton wound up being a plus 12 for New York in 12 minutes coming off the bench. So that was a huge, huge stretch that she gave. No one else in the game either way was double digits plus minus, except for Alana Smith, who is a plus 20, and then our old friend Myesha Hines-Allen, unfortunately, is a minus 19. Because now, all of a sudden, she's stuck playing center, and that's really not where she's best, especially against Jonquel Jones. That is a matchup that they don't want Myesha Hines-Allen to have to play, and she got stuck there. And Alana Smith, like, not a huge stat night. You know, she's got 2 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, but, like, she's a threat from the perimeter. She does move the ball well with those 4 assists for a big in just 20 minutes. Like, she's a rebounder, and her size on Jonquel Jones, like, gets everybody where they need to be. And all of a sudden, Nafisa Collier's got a lot bigger load to try to manage. You know, Stewie has found ways in this series to get her shot off. Last night, you know, she's only 9 for 20, but she goes to the free throw line 10 times. Just super aggressive. 30 points, 11 rebounds. They have this amazing clip of her on the bench saying, we are not losing this bleeping game. And sure enough, at the end, they do enough, and Sabrina's in a position to hit the shot. And you got to give her a ton of credit because, there's a lot of great players in this league. A lot of great shooters. I don't know how many I would take over Ionescu in a big spot because her self-belief is so extraordinarily high. Whether it's true or not, and it becomes self-fulfilling to an extent, she believes that she was made for those moments, and thus she is not afraid to take them. And when she had 3 shots late in this game, one went in, the first one went in, the second one went in and out, and she was laughing. And she's just like, what are you going to do? The ball was literally halfway in. And the next one, logo, bang, bang, night-night, and all of a sudden Minnesota is going to have to fend off elimination to force a Game 5 in New York, or New York's finally, after in their seventh attempt in the finals, going to win a WNBA championship.
Yeah, and I think the good thing about Sabrina also, and it's worked well for her all season long, just her, you know, taking her time running the offense. Like, she didn't shoot almost damn
near the stuff.
Entire, like, first quarter, but she still had an impact on the game. And that just speaks to, you know, the depth of this team. You know, Stewie, she's going to go out there. She's going to get her 30-piece. But Sabrina, you know, when the lights are the brightest and they need, you know, a shot or a bucket, they can turn to her. So, super shout out to the Liberty. Hopefully they, you know, they do end up getting it done. I'm rooting for the Lynx still. I think they're going to have something to say in Game 4 before they eventually, you know, if necessary, have to head back to New York.
I would love a game. Give me a Game 5. I'm a Lynx fan of this one. I would like them to win, but just give me a Game 5 at the very least.
When would Game 5 be?
Sunday, unfortunately.
Ain't no way.
Yeah.
2-2-2?
Huh?
So they played yesterday. They're going to play Friday.
Bro.
And then they're going to play again on
Sunday? They're getting 1.5 million viewers on ESPN on Sunday. Like, yeah, it's going to be 2 million people that watch that Game 5 in the middle of an NFL Sunday. Especially this NFL Sunday, by the way, because there's a lot of crap games.
Yeah.
Championship on the line? Like, I'm going to be ticked because I don't know. I might have to get to Northwest Stadium at like 2 o'clock so I make sure I can sit down and watch that one.
Mm-hmm.
And be like, oh, look, Jaden scored again. All right, back to the fourth quarter. All right, it's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And when we get back, we have our first ever edition of Craig's Court. I have to rule on a complaint against Anthony Haney. Bum, bum, bum. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app and streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980. We see Darius Dameron, the producer of Grant and Danny, who has abandoned his show host. It's clear he's got it, or whoever's over there.
Yeah, he's got it.
He's good.
I might get in trouble. We'll see. We'll find out.
Yeah.
It'll be a fun game.
But we are we just decided we're going to call this segment Craig's Court. And I'm rule with an iron fist. So you came in here the other day and you're like, I'm a little scared to play your producer. This is the day Anthony was out on Monday in Madden. You guys have a league that has been going for quite a while now.
Yeah.
Yep. And it is very specifically a sim league. So, Darius, can you explain first what a sim league is and then what your complaint is before the court here against one Anthony Haney?
So a simulation Madden league is basically, it's a belief that you're bringing together a group of people in a Madden franchise where 32 people play online together, and you're the point of it is to simulate what you see on Sundays, to simulate real life football, as opposed to if you're just out there in the wild playing Madden online, playing ranked games or playing Madden Ultimate Team or any of those other goofy modes, anything goes. People are just calling the same play over and over again. They're only running the plays that work the best because they exploit the computer AI and things like that. So Simulation Madden League has rules in place to be able to kind of protect
quality
us
control.
From that. Yeah, it's quality control. It's a safe space for people who appreciate football in a different way and want to emulate that in the video game version of football.
Okay, so that brings Anthony back into the picture. what has young Anthony Haney done in this league that has upset you?
So I would say, one, I think Anthony has become the league villain, which I think is hilarious.
Ooh.
That, of course, one of my coworkers I bring in is now the villain of the league. It kind of started last year. He entered the league midway through last year.
Okay.
And he got in a lot of heated debates and battles with one of our division rivals, because we were in the same division last Madden as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
About his gameplay. And what a lot of people do is a lot of people call him corny. They say that he's cheesy. These are words that you use to describe somebody who kind of is going against the grain of what a Sim Madden league is about.
So the play calling, you might say it's like a college offense. If you wanted to perhaps use a topical reference from a few weeks ago.
Sure, sure. Cam Taylor-Britt would not be very impressed by Anthony's offense, I would say.
Okay. Anthony, would you like to explain yourself, defend yourself against these charges?
So, Craig, I understand the Sim League. I understand what it is. And I feel like what I do a decent job of emulating what we see on Sundays. Last year, the Commanders, Sam Howell, Eric Bieniemy, they had a pass-heavy offense. I emulated that same. Craig, it was so. Sam Howell was my quarterback. I emulated that offense. So people get mad that I throw the ball literally every play. Yes, and I do audible at the line of scrimmage. I think that's where a lot of people get upset because I am, you know, taking my time to actually call the play as opposed to running the play as is.
Now, he says audible at the line of scrimmage. I think he more so means hot routing, where you come to the line of scrimmage and you're changing the route of everybody that's on the field. I mean, you're a football guy.
Yeah, so you're no longer running the a play. You've created your own play.
Essentially, he's creating a play on the fly. And that is one tedious because you as a defender have to just sit there and watch his quarterback do this for 35 of the 40 seconds on the play clock. But it's also, I think in the Sim Madden League community, it also feels kind of like a cop-out. It feels like you're finding ways to abuse the AI in ways where it's clear that EA as a company is not the greatest when it comes to developing this Madden football game in the way that it's supposed to emulate what we see on Sundays. And I feel like some of that stuff that he does kind of takes advantage of some of those faults that EA has.
And you don't think that Anthony is a young Peyton Manning in the making that can actually draw plays in the dirt at the line of scrimmage, seemingly in the 35 of seconds of the play clock.
I think he's influenced by his years of playing online ranked games. I know whenever he puts his stream up, his stream title is always Taking Money, which indicates to me that he plays for money. At some point in his life. And I think when you play for money, I think all bets are off the table. You just do whatever you need to do to get the
W. Can I defend myself real quick?
You've been supposed to be doing that the whole time, Anthony. Now's a good start. Your defense so far is I emulated Eric Bieniemy.
So first of all,
that's not a great defense.
I don't play that many online. The games I play are against my friends. And usually, like, we do play for, like, money here and there just to make it competitive. But literally, I have a chat where it's just three people in the chat. We play each other all year round. It's just us three.
So you don't just – you've never just, like, randomly played a bunch of online
games? No, I don't
have
players club. I don't have a players lounge thingy, players club, whatever that stuff is. I literally play three people. And then if I go to Indy, I'll play Zaire. I don't play that many people.
Okay.
So when I found out you played Madden and you were good, you know what I wanted to do? Play you.
Just remember, though, I never said that I was good.
Oh.
That's not something I ever do. I'm not a gloater. I'm not one of those guys that goes around saying, oh, yeah, I'm good. I won the Super Bowl.
Are you good and you just don't say it, or are you actually like, you're like, okay?
I am, well, for one, yeah, I'm humble. So I'm not going to be one to do that goes around saying I'm the best, because I feel like when I do that, I feel like there's a higher power that's going to humble me. So I call them the Madden gods. I think the Madden gods will humble you. I think I'm pretty more than decent.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm regularly competitive in my league. I'm always making the playoffs, you know.
That's good.
I've won a couple of Super Bowls over the 50, we're now 57 seasons in since Madden 16. Yeah. Yeah. Since Madden 16.
Okay.
I've been running this league since Madden 16 and we're 57 seasons in.
Okay, so it's like five seasons a calendar year. That's not heinous.
Yeah, we average about six or seven seasons a year.
Okay, yeah. Math has never been my strong suit. So, Anthony, as we go near final, final arguments here so I can make a ruling, do you have any final defenses on either any of the facts of the case or justification that actually it's okay that I do these things? That, like, what really, I think what we need to, the loophole we need to close here, the loop we need to close is, do you do the hot route bit? Because running a hurry-up offense, I think, is fair as long as you...
I stopped running in hurry-up offense because people were like, why is he only run hurry-up offense? So guess what I do? I don't run anymore. Anytime someone's come to the chat with a complaint, I've tried my best to do away with. They said I ran too many RPOs. I played my last game, didn't run one RPO. Ironically, theirs lost yesterday on an RPO. So it's just like... Y'all want to get mad at me for running RPOs, but here goes somebody else running RPOs. So I'm not going to use the RPOs anymore. I'm not going to run hurry-up offense anymore. And I asked the chat. I said, if you guys need me to not do anything else, let me know.
It's pretty compelling. Darius, final argument goes to you.
To be fair, I want to fact check the RPO part. He did run an RPO, I believe, the final like four or five plays of our last matchup. which is why people were in my chat, my Twitch stream chat, were upset because they were like, he just keeps doing the same RPO. What the heck? So, yeah,
I ran
when you're repeatedly running the same plays
I think I've heard enough. Here's
that's great.
I kind of have a dual ruling. I don't know if it's going to make either of you happy. I think on some of like the running the same plays thing, I actually rule in Anthony's favor because ultimately, like, if you can't stop it and you know it's coming, like, that actually is real football. You know, I've seen coordinators, especially in modern football, coordinators are spamming things more. We find a thing that works, we're going to get back to it. Now, they might dress it up some different ways. You know, you might run, if you run RPO out of some different formations, different this, different that. Okay. Eventually, like, you do need to stop it. However, Anthony, you lose this case because you emulated Eric Bieniemy. The segment didn't need to go beyond 451. If your defense is, I was doing what Eric Bieniemy was doing with Sam Howell,
lose
on that alone. That ruling is final.
Slam
that
the gavel.
That kind of hurt my hand. I need an actual gavel. Darius, thank you, sir. You may now thank return you. To the show that is paying you to be here.
Sorry, CK. Please don't fire me.
Okay. When we get back, Dan Pizzuto from the 33rd team.